Israel, a place of God's choosing. This summer we were fortunate to take a trip to Israel. And we must say that while there was no one thing that stands out most impressive, we were impressed by the diverse topography, the diverse climate, the size of the building blocks used so many years ago, and the many archaeological sites, that clearly demonstrate the historical record that we read about in our daily readings. We therefore hope that some of the images we'll show will enhance your appreciation of the divine narrative, and in a couple of places we will place an emphasis on what most of you enthusiastically believe. The visuals you are about to see are not about us, what we saw, what we did, or where we went, but it is about a little sliver of land, currently squeezed between the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea and that great depression that is the Jordan Valley and the Dead Sea. It is about the land that was promised to Abraham, promised again to Isaac and to Jacob. It is a place where David's throne will be reestablished, which will be occupied by their seed, which is Christ. And we do read in Galatians chapter 3, verse 16, "Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not unto seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed, which is Christ." We also read in 2 Samuel 7, "And when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build an house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever." We begin then our narrative, Genesis chapter 11, verse 31. "And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. And they came unto Haran and dwelt there." Verse 32. "And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." We see in the next chapter that God spoke directly to Abram while he was still in Haran. Genesis 12, verse 1. "Now the Lord had said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and I will make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." From Haran, Abram, Sarai, and Abram's nephew Lot, with all their substance, traveled south. He came first to a place called Shechem and settled in a forested area midway between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. It was one of the highest places in Canaan with a magnificent view in every direction. He could see the coastal plain in the west, in the Jordan, and the Jordan Valley to the east. So for a modern perspective, Abram settled slightly inside we now know as the northern boundary of the West Bank. "And Abram passed through the land unto a place of Shechem, unto the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was still in the land." A Canaanite is a generic word and carries the meaning of a merchantman. Many times a Canaanite referred to all peoples who at one time or another occupied the area from Lebanon down to the Negev and from the Jordan Valley over to the coast that wasn't Philistia. Later on in the narrative, we read that both Abram and Lot grew in substance and flock and herd, so much so there was conflict between the herdsmen of Lot and the herdsmen of Abram. Genesis 13, verse 2. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was very great, so that they could not dwell together. Abram, being the man of character he was, made the decision for them to separate. He gave Lot first choice, so that if he took the left, Abram would move to the right. Lot chose the area of the Jordan Valley. Indeed, Lot settled towards the city of Sodom. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, making the area near Hebron as his settled home. God then said to Abram, "Lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward, Mount Hermon, and southward, the barren, howling wilderness of Zin, eastward, the Judean wilderness, the Dead Sea Valley, and westward, the valley of Elah. For all the land that thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever." In chapter 17 of Genesis, we read that God spoke to Abram in terms of an everlasting covenant. "And I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly." Verse 7. "And I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and thy seed after thee in their generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee, and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee, and to thy seed after thee, the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God." As of yet, Abram and Sarai had not started a family. But God promised them a son. And God, who cannot lie and is faithful in all that he promises, Sarah, at the age of 90 years of age, gave birth to Isaac. And we do read in Genesis 21, "And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abram a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abram called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. By and by, Isaac grew into a strapping young man, and eventually took unto himself Rebekah to wife. Unto that union were born two males, twins actually, and they named them Esau and Jacob." We all know the account. We know from reading it many times that because of deceit, Jacob had to flee from the face of his brother Esau, and by circumstance had to spend the better part of 20 years working for his father-in-law, Laban. Through trust in God and faith in the promises God made unto Abraham and Isaac before him, Jacob's family grew. He now had 11 sons, and he increased in substance. Genesis chapter 30, verse 43. "And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle, and maidservants, and men servants, and camels, and asses." We read also in Genesis chapter 31 that it appeared unto Jacob that it was time that he separated himself from the household of his father-in-law. Verse 1. "And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and all that which was our father's hath, all of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory." Verse 2. "And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. On the way, Jacob met his brother Esau. And for all intents and purposes, the deadly feud that lay between them was long forgotten by Esau. Genesis 33, verse 4. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And further down in the same chapter, verses 15 through 17, they separated and went their separate ways. Genesis 33, verse 15 reads, And Esau said, Let me now leave thee with some of the folk that are with me. And he said, What needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. Esau then headed south, and Jacob went down the river valley that is Jabbok, right here, across Jordan, up the Judean wilderness, and into Canaan. We all know the account of Joseph, his being sold as a servant unto Midianite merchantmen, who in turn sold him to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh. Joseph was only 17 when he arrived in Egypt. And so under God's tender care, Joseph went from being a slave to a houseboy, to a prisoner, to second in command in all of Egypt. We also know of the move to Egypt by Jacob and his family because of a severe drought, where they lived comfortably for many years. However, there arose in Egypt a king who knew not Joseph, and the pleasant sojourn turned into servitude. And Israel groaned because of their bondage. They cried, and their cry rose up to God, and he heard them. Gradually, after a series of plagues, the children of Israel, under the leadership of Moses and under the strong right arm of God, left Egypt. Exodus 13:21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of the fire by night from before the people. In that barren, howling wilderness, that is the wilderness of Zin and the wilderness of Paran, they sojourned 40 years, moving when Yahweh directed them to move, and encamping them when and where he directed them to camp. And so it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. Reading from Numbers 9. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel pitched their tents. The commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed. And at the commandment of the Lord they pitched. As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. And when the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle many days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. Eventually they came to the highlands overlooking the southern end of the Jordan River. Across the river was Jericho, and beyond was the Judean wilderness. And beyond that, the ancestral home of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Moses was not to see any more of the promised land than that. Moses was to die in those mountains, Syria here, and Joshua was to lead them across and take possession of that beautiful land, a land flowing with milk and honey. That task would not be an easy one. There were many people to drive out. There were many fortified cities to overrun and destroy. And the first was to be destroyed was Jericho, then Ai, and eventually all the south country of Canaan. Joshua chapter 10. So Joshua smote all the country of the hills, and of the south, and of the vale, and of the springs, and all their kings. He left none remaining, but utterly destroyed all that breathed, as the Lord God of Israel commanded. And Joshua smote them from Kadesh Barnea, even unto Gaza, and all the country of Goshen, even unto Gideon. Joshua, under the strong right arm of God, waged war over all the land, and all told he killed 31 kings, from Baal-Gad in the valley of Lebanon, even unto the Mount Halak that goeth up to Seir, which Joshua gave unto the tribes of Israel for a possession. After all the wars were over, after all the tribes had been given their allotment, it came to pass, after all these things, that Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of Yahweh, died, being 110 years old. Yet, with all that Joshua accomplished, with all the kings that the children of Israel, under the leadership of Joshua, had killed, yet even with all the Canaanites that Israel had displaced according to what God had commanded, still the Canaanite was in the land. Judges chapter 3. And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and Hivites, and Jebusites. And they took their daughters to be their wives, and gave their daughters to their sons, and served other gods. The Hebrew nation, after the death of Joshua, had no strong central government, no strong leader. They were a confederacy of 12 independent tribes with no unifying force except the living God of Israel. For approximately 300 years, they were in and out of a state of anarchy, harassed at times by civil war among themselves, and surrounded by enemies who made attempt after attempt to exterminate them. They were in reality a theocracy, guided and directed by God, but they did not take God very seriously. They fell into various stages of idol worship. After the attempt of 12 judges and too many relapses, they decided they wanted a king to rule over them like their neighbors. And they chose Saul, son of Kish, of the tribe of Benjamin. Tall, handsome, humble. Saul began his reign with a brilliant victory over the Ammonites. This was followed by Samuel's warning to nation and king. 1 Samuel chapter 12. Now therefore behold the king whom ye have chosen and whom ye have desired. And behold the Lord hath set a king over you. Now therefore behold the king whom ye have chosen and whom you have desired. And behold the Lord has set a king over you. If ye will fear the Lord and serve him, and obey his voice, and rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall both ye and also the king that reigneth over you continue following the Lord your God. But if ye will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall the hand of the Lord be against you as it was against your fathers. From there, however, Saul began a decline that would end in the death of his sons and suicide of himself. He committed three serious mistakes that led to his downfall. His first mistake occurs in 1 Samuel chapter 13. After his initial success, his humility gave way to pride, and instead of following the instructions, he took matters into his own hands and did what he was not authorized to do. He offered a sacrifice, which was the exclusive function of the priests. His second mistake, chapter 14, showed the people the senseless and foolish manner in which he chose to rule and lead his army. His third mistake, chapter 15, demonstrated deliberate disobedience toward God and led to the pronouncement by Samuel Because thou hast rejected God, God has rejected you from being king. And as Samuel turned about to go away, Saul laid hold upon the skirt of his mantle, and it rent. Samuel said unto him, The Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. Shortly after this, we read of Samuel being sent to the house of Jesse to select one of his sons to reign over Israel. With very little fanfare then, David was anointed king by Samuel. David had become a good friend of Jonathan, and because of his musical ability, he was prominent in the king's court, entertaining the king, and at some point even was the king's armor bearer. Several years passed by, and while David had been a regular attendee at the royal palace, he was a shepherd at heart and returned to his first passion, attending his father's sheep. At some point while Israel were contending with the Philistines, and Jesse being concerned for the welfare of his older sons, he sent David to report on their well-being. It was at this time in the Valley of Elah, that the Philistine champion Goliath appeared and challenged the army of Saul. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man that we may fight together. No one would come forth to this challenge but David, who by chance happened to arrive just as Goliath issued his taunting cry. Goliath, who was approximately 9 feet tall, was a giant of a man, and by all reckoning, towered over David by over 3 feet. To all observers, it was no match. Goliath's armor weighed almost 150 pounds, and his spearhead about 20 pounds. David, though armed with a sling and 5 stones, went down to meet Goliath, and with 1 stone, he hit Goliath in the forehead, and Goliath died there in the valley of Elah, between Succoth, which belongeth to Judah, and Azekah in Ephesim. One would think that such a victory would have endeared David to Saul for the rest of his life, but such was not the case. Saul spent the rest of his life living in jealousy over David's fame and pursued David from one end of Israel to the other, attempting to kill him. David spent that time sometimes living among Israel's enemies and some of the time hiding out in caves near the spring of En-Gedi. But Saul was not to be king over Israel forever. And even though David had opportunity to kill Saul, he would not turn a hand against the Lord's anointed. Saul and his army were once again pitched in battle against the Philistines, this time in the north. We read in 1 Samuel 31, Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchusha, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded by the archers. So there, Saul, under the shadow of Mount Gilboa, his sons, his army, and now himself, sorely wounded, he fell upon his own sword and died. Anointed to be king over God's chosen people Israel, from very humble beginnings, thus was ended the life of Saul, son of Kish, a Benjamite. Even though David was quietly anointed king by Samuel, Samuel was now dead. And David knew that many of Saul's sons had been killed by the Philistines. Still, Ishbosheth remained and declared that he would be king. Inquiring of the Lord, David asked and was told that indeed he would be king. He went up and was anointed king over Judah. 7 years later, he was captured. 7 years later, he captured Jebus and made Jerusalem capital over all of Israel. And there he reigned for the next 33 years. Brothers and sisters and friends, young people, that city of Jebus, city of David, is clearly visible today in a very large excavation site just south of the Dung Gate in the old city wall. The old city of Jerusalem is approximately 220 acres, or 1 square kilometer. For those of you who have been to Israel for reference, from the Dome of the Rock to the King David Hotel is about 1 mile. For those of you who like details, the current walls that surround Old Jerusalem are on average 10 feet thick. And although they were rebuilt in the days of Nehemiah, the current walls were built by the Ottoman Turkish Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent during the years of 1535 to 1542. But back to details that count. David eventually grew old, and the kingdom, while it had endured many years of fighting and bloodshed, now stretched from the River of Egypt, to the Euphrates. And when Solomon became king after David's death, the country was at peace. Up here, the River Euphrates. We do read in Deuteronomy 28, "It shall come to pass," Moses wrote, "if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon thee and overtake thee, if thou shalt hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Blessed shalt thou be in the city, and blessed shalt thou be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy ground, and the fruit of thy cattle, the increase of thy cattle and the flocks of thy sheep. Blessed shall be the basket of thy store. Blessed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and blessed shalt thou be when thou goest out. The Lord shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way and flee before thee 7 ways. The Lord shall command the blessing upon thee in thy storehouses, and in all that thou settest thine hand unto to do, he shall bless thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. The Lord shall establish thee in holy place unto himself, as he hath sworn unto thee, if thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God and walk in his ways." We also read in the book of Judges, chapter 17. "In those days, there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes." Moses tells us what would happen if they departed from the commandments and precepts of the living God of Israel. Deuteronomy 28. "But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Cursed shalt thou be in the city, and cursed shalt thou be in the field. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store. Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body and the fruit of thy land, the increase of thy kine and the flocks of thy sheep. Cursed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and cursed shalt thou be when thou goest out. The Lord shall send upon thee cursing, vexation, and rebuke in all that thou settest thine hand unto for to do, until thou be destroyed, and until thou perish quickly, because of the wickedness of thy doings, whereby thou hast forsaken me. The Lord shall make the pestilence cleave unto thee, until he have consumed thee from off the land, whither thou goest to possess it. The Lord shall smite thee with a consumption, and with a fever, and with an inflammation, and with an extreme burning, and with the sword, and with blasting, and with mildew, and they shall pursue thee until thou perish. What happened? Even with a king they did depart. They sinned grievously against their God, and they indeed paid the price. First the Assyrians came down and invaded the land of Israel, destroying towns along the way, and removed the northern kingdom from ever being a kingdom again. 2 Kings chapter 17. In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away into Assyria and placed them in Halah and in Habor by the river of Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. It was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods, and walked in the statutes of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel, and the kings of Israel, which they had made. Did Judah fare any better? No. The word of the Lord came again unto me, saying, Ezekiel 23, Son of man, there were two women, the daughters of one mother, and they committed whoredoms in Egypt. They committed whoredoms in their youth. There were their breasts pressed, and there they bruised the teats of their virginity. And the names of them were Ahola, the elder, and Aholibah, her sister. And they were mine, and they bare sons and daughters. Thus were their names. Samaria is Ahola, and Jerusalem is Aholibah. And Ahola played the harlot when she was mine, and she doted on her lovers, on the Assyrians, her neighbors. And when her sister Aholibah saw this, she was more corrupt in her inordinate love than she, and in her whoredoms more than her sister in her whoredoms. Therefore, Aholibah, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will raise up thy lovers against thee, whom thy mind is alienated, and I will bring them against thee on every side, the Babylonians and all the Chaldeans, Pekod, Shoah, Koah, and all the Assyrians with them, all them desirable young men, captains and rulers, great lords and renowned, all of them riding upon horses. And I will set my jealousy against thee, and they shall deal furiously with thee. They shall take away thy nose and thine ears, and thy remnant shall fall by the sword. They shall take thy sons and thy daughters, and thy residue shall be devoured by the fire. In the end, the fall of Jerusalem to the Babylonians was secondary to the horrors that went on inside the walls. Hundreds, if not thousands, died horrible deaths, some from starvation, some from cannibalism. The fall of Jerusalem is recorded in Scripture thusly. 2 Kings chapter 25. And in the fifth month, on the seventh day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem. And he burnt the house of the Lord and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great man's house burnt he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldeans that were with the captain of the guard brake down the walls of Jerusalem round about. Jerusalem was rebuilt under the direction of Nehemiah. The walls took 52 days, but the temple much, much longer. And sadly, the rebuilt temple was only a shadow of what Solomon had built. Indeed, when the Queen of Sheba came and saw all that Solomon had accomplished, she said, "Howbeit, I believed not the words until I came. And mine eyes had seen it, and behold, the half of was not told me. Thy wisdom and prosperity exceedeth the fame which I heard. Happy are thy men. Happy are these thy servants which stand continually before thee, and they hear thy wisdom. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee, to set thee on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever." The Lord loved Israel forever. "Therefore made he the king to do judgment and justice." The newfound prosperity and enthusiasm under the supervision of Nehemiah was unfortunately cut short. All the prophets after the exile spake of the lack of dedication, the lack of enthusiasm for service unto the Lord. So in the 400 or so years between the Old and New Testaments, the hearts and minds of the returned exiles deteriorated significantly. By the times of the birth of Christ, under the leadership of Herod the Great, the Roman domination over all the area, while Herod had completed massive building projects, the people were restless. Priesthood was far from being righteous, and the leadership was content to allow Rome to exercise a heavy tax burden. Herod being a puppet king, subservient to the emperor, his focus was keeping Rome happy. While Herod did not start the process of making Masada a self-sustaining fortress, he did complete it, including a massive multi-level palace at the northern end. This one of three levels on the north end of Masada. Herod also built a massive seaport and supporting city at Caesarea. A massive aqueduct to bring fresh water down from the northern highlands. He also built a palace at, on, and in a mountain south of Jerusalem, which included a burial chamber for his internment. Remains of all these are still there for public viewing today. This is that same Herod, the same Herod that conspired to kill the newborn Son of God, Jesus of Nazareth. The Roman influence in all of Herod's projects is readily apparent when you see stonework and colored plaster that adorns much of the walls recently excavated. We mentioned earlier that as Abraham was settling into his role as a stranger and a pilgrim in the land that God had sent him into, the Canaanite was in the land. As Joshua passed from the scene, and as the land went through turbulent times during the period of the judges, and then during the period of the kings of Israel and Judah, the Canaanite was still in the land. 1 Kings chapter 9. "And all the people that were left of the Amorites, the Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, which were not the children of Israel, their children that were left after them in the land, whom the children of Israel also were not able utterly to destroy, these did Solomon levy a tribute of bond service unto this day." Zechariah, writing in chapter 14, speaks of a day yet future even to us. Zechariah 14, verse 21. "Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judea shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seed therein. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. As one moves about Israel, both north and south, as one walks through the narrow streets of Old Jerusalem, indeed at certain times of the day, even if you are sitting at rest in your room, the Muslim or Palestinian presence is very much seen and heard. Palestinian neighborhoods are at times just around the corner from a Jewish one. Shopkeepers in the old city are mostly Arab. And most annoying is the Muslim call to prayer sounded over loudspeakers at almost maximum velocity far too frequently as you drive around the countryside. You see this. This road leads to an area A under the Palestinian Authority. The entrance for Israel citizens is forbidden, dangerous to your lives, and is against the Israeli law. Stay away or penalty of death. It is true that Israel is governed by an Israeli government, Israeli parliament known as the Knesset. It is also true that Israel is policed by the Israel Defense Force, or IDF. However, the country, or at least certain parts of it, are very much controlled by world view. Recently in the news, we heard that UNESCO, a branch of the United Nations, declared that Hebron was officially a Palestinian heritage center. For those of you who are not aware, Hebron has several sites very, very sacred to Judaism. Genesis 23. And Sarah was 120 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah. And Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abram came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. And he communed with them, saying, "If it be your mind that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me to Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give the cave of Machpelah, which he hath, which is in the end of his field, for as much money as it is worth, he shall give it me for a possession of a burying place among you." Verse 19, after this, Abram buried Sarah, the wife, his wife, in the field of the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. Later, as Jacob was nearing death, he said to his family, Genesis 49, and he charged them and said unto them, "I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession of a burying place." There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. For several days, a riotous gang of Palestinians occupied the city of Hebron, and even though Jews normally have access to those sites, because of world opinion, they were at this time denied. Clearly, the Canaanite is still in the land. Now, there is some debate among Christadelphians concerning the identification of the Northern Confederacy, as expressed in Ezekiel 38. Let me be perfectly clear. I am not suggesting that the Palestinians, or if you will, the Canaanite, are a mortal concern for Israel. If anything, they are a ticking time bomb, a prickling briar. That is to say that an explosive situation may lead to more anti-Semitic rhetoric from any number of sources. And Israel recognizes quite well that how they react may trigger a much bigger and possible lethal response. Also, let me be perfectly clear. I am not suggesting that the Palestinians are rightful possessions of what land they currently occupy. The prophet Ezekiel, among others, clearly identifies the real threat. Indeed, as we speak, that threat is parked just across Israel's Golan border with Syria. Russia has two elite companies of soldiers stationed in the Syrian village of Tal al-Shayim. And we read in Ezekiel 38, I am against thee, O Gog, chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with thee. And please understand that Persia / Iran is committed to any effort that will spell the complete demise of every Jew and to wipe off the world map any evidence that Israel ever existed. We do know, however, that will not happen. We also know that Russia and Iran are complete in compliance. Jeremiah 30, For I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. Though I make a full end of all nations whither I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in measure, and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. Our hope, our prayer, indeed all our desire, is to be granted a place in God's kingdom, living and reigning with Christ upon this earth. The final temple wherein God's name will be placed will be constructed when everything from just north of the Dome of the Rock to almost King David Hotel, 1 mile, will be leveled. Jeremiah 31, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the city shall be built to the Lord from the Tower of Hananel unto the gate of the corner. The Mount of Olives, Mount Moriah, Mount Zion, even the sacred wall of Solomon's Temple Mount will be leveled, including the abomination of all abominations, the Dome of the Rock. The Kidron Valley will be no more. The central Artyropian and Hinnom valleys will be filled. Then once leveled, the whole area, at least 1 mile square, will be raised up. For some to say that Israel is finally back in the land, for some to say that no more bad can befall the Jewish people, then we can say, I'm sorry, you're wrong. As long as the Canaanite is still in the land, as long as there are 7, 8, or 9 million Jews still in dispersion, then we await one final time of trouble, one final invasion by the latter-day Assyrian. At that time, then will the Canaanite finally be purged from the land of Israel. For that time, with one voice, we pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee.